capable of feeling the impression that was made on a sinful and fanatic world. At the voice of their pastor, the robber, the incendiary, the homicide, arose by thousands to redeem their souls by repeating on the infidels the same deeds which they had exercised against their Christian brethren. And the terms of atonement were eagerly embraced by offenders of every rank and denomination. None were pure. None were exempt from the guilt and penalty of sin. And those who were the least amenable to the justice of God and the church were the best entitled to the temporal and eternal recompense of their pious courage. If they fell, the spirit of the Latin clergy did not hesitate to adorn their tomb with a crown of martyrdom. And should they survive, they could expect, without impatience, the delay and increase of their heavenly reward. They offered their blood to the Son of God, who had laid down his life for their salvation. They took up the cross and entered with confidence into the way of the Lord. His providence would watch over their safety. Perhaps his visible and miraculous power would smooth the difficulties of their holy enterprise. The cloud and pillar of Jehovah had marched before the Israelites into the promised land. Might not the Christians more reasonably hope that the rivers would open for their passage, that the walls of the strongest cities would fall at the sound of their trumpets, and that the sun would be arrested in his mid-career to allow them time for the destruction of the infidels? Of the chiefs and soldiers who marched to the Holy Sepulchre, I will dare to affirm that all were prompted by the spirit of enthusiasm, the belief of merit, the hope of reward, and the assurance of divine aid. But I am equally persuaded that in many it was not the soul, that in some it was not the leading principle of action. Their vassals and soldiers trusted their fortunes to God and their master. The spoils of a Turkish emir might enrich the meanest follower of the camp, and the flavor of the wines, the beauty of the Grecian women, were temptations more adapted to the nature than to the profession of the champions of the cross. The love of freedom was a powerful incitement to the multitudes who were oppressed by feudal or ecclesiastical tyranny. Under this holy sign, the peasants and burghers who were attached to the servitude of the glebe might escape from a haughty lord and transplant themselves and their families to a land of liberty. The monk might release himself from the discipline of his convent. The debtor might suspend the accumulation of usury and the pursuit of his creditors. And outlaws and malefactors of every caste might continue to brave the laws and elude the punishment of their crimes. These motives were potent and numerous. When we have singly computed their weight on the mind of each individual, we must add the infinite series, the multiplying powers of example and fashion. The first proselytes became the warmest and the most effectual missionaries of the cross. Among their friends and countrymen, they preached the duty, the merit, and the recompense of their holy vow, and the most reluctant hearers were insensibly drawn within the whirlpool of persuasion and authority. The martial youths were fired by the reproach or suspicion of cowardice. The opportunity of visiting with an army the sepulchre of Christ was embraced by the old and infirm, by women and children, who consulted rather their zeal than their strength. And those who in the evening had derided the folly of their companions were the most eager the ensuing day to tread in their footsteps. The ignorance which magnified the hopes diminished the perils of the enterprise. Since the Turkish conquest, the paths of pilgrimage were obliterated. The chiefs themselves had an imperfect notion of the length of the way and the state of their enemies, and such was the stupidity of the people that at the sight of the first city or castle beyond the limits of their knowledge, they were ready to ask whether that was not the Jerusalem, the term and object of their labors. Yet the more prudent of the crusaders, who were not sure that they should be fed from heaven with a shower of quails or manna, provided themselves with those precious metals which in every country are the representatives of every commodity. To defray, according to their rank, the expenses of the road, princes alienated their provinces, nobles their lands and castles, peasants their cattle and the instruments of husbandry. The value of property was depreciated by the eager competition of multitudes, while the price of arms and horses was raised to an exorbitant height by the wants and impatience of
在线英语听力室，感谢您的收听，请记住我们的网址：3w.teamroom.com。